everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's September 2024, and you are listening to episode 410, which is a conversation about modern freedom in the work of D.C. Schindler, particularly his book, Retrieving Freedom, The Christian Appropriation of the Classical Tradition. Now, that sounds a little academic, but this is a very important conversation, so I want you to hang with this episode because it has so many applications to things, everyday things and hot button issues that you think about, but you have to get the full scope of all the history and some of the issues involved. So you will find this podcast very thought-provoking. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Stephen Mitchell, who holds a PhD in humanities. He lives in North Carolina and teaches English and humanities at Covenant Day School. Stephen has written an online article for the Christian Research Journal. He has done a book review for us. His article is called The Just Man Justices, a review of D.C. Schindler's Retrieving Freedom, The Christian Appropriation of the Classical Tradition. And you can read it for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Stephen, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
Thank you, Melanie. It's good to be here again.
Well, before I get started specifically asking Stephen about his review, I want to more broadly ask him about the subject matter that we're going to talk about today overall, and why is it important for Christians to even think about this topic?
Sure. So I guess broadly, the topic is the nature of liberty, how we understand it. And of course, the piece that we're going to be talking about is I wrote a review of D.C. Schindler's work on this. And we'll talk about him in a minute. But, you know, he says in his work on Locke that essentially that how we conceive liberty or freedom will determine the shape of the society we live in. It will determine the shape of the polis. That's his great claim. And so I would just go right to that as probably the quickest way to talk about why this matters. You know, I would say that while certainly the American political system is not, you know, the focal point of the church in the world, it's not the focus of concern there. Certainly we can look at the American political situation right now and see very much that in the great conflicts that we're seeing, I think one of the things that we need to recognize is that we don't probably agree on what liberty is or what freedom is. Like, I think that's one of our problems. Or another way of saying it, as I think Schindler's critique of Locke will point out, is that that the very understanding that reigns of modern liberty, that reigns in the West, the modern West, is itself sort of generative of this sort of conflict that we see manifested as just one example in the American political system right now. But fundamentally, it gets even more important because, you know, I'm not really much myself, you know, tapped into politics as such, at least in the way they're enacted. But the nature of liberty really gets into our relationship to the world. And so it affects our notion of ethics. It affects our view of who God is. It affects how we conceive our relationship to what is other than us, and how we conceive our relationship even to ourselves, to our own bodies, to our own identities. And so the way we come to understand liberty, and one of Schindler's great claims is that the modern world has essentially reversed the classical understanding of freedom, and that this reversal is itself responsible for much that, as Christians, we might be inclined to look askance at in the modern world. The problem for us, one of the things I'm going to try to point out, and mostly what I'm going to be doing is pointing toward his work, because he is an expert on these writers in a way I'm not. But, you know, one of the things he's going to point out is that it's very likely, right, that we are operating with a vision of freedom that is actually subversive of the very faith that we say, you know, as Christians, we affirm. And that's going to be, I think, controversial for some people, but that's what makes it significant.
Now, some of our listeners may not be familiar with the work of John Locke, who was a philosopher that lived many centuries ago. And so what I'm going to do is, in the show notes of this episode, we will link some of the articles that we have published in the Christian Research Journal that give you a little bit more background on his views that would be helpful as you consider some of the things that Stephen is going to talk about today. So with that in mind, let's talk about specifically this book that you reviewed for us. Who is the author, and why did it strike you that this is a significant book that needs to be considered?
Sure. So D.C. Schindler is a practicing Roman Catholic and a theologian. He works at the Catholic University of America, but he's a highly regarded philosophical theologian. And, you know, his work is read and critiqued and received, you know, in sort of the highest academic circles. I know that we don't all move in those, myself included, in the highest academic circles, but, you know, he's influential in that sense on the stream of thought as relates to, you know, these ideas of freedom and how it plays out in the modern world. I think David Bentley Hart has called him like the best Catholic philosophical theologian in the, you know, the English speaking world, at least of his generation. So some high praise there. You know, he's going to leave a significant print, if you will, behind him. Technically the book I reviewed is his second one, called Retrieving Freedom, The Christian Appropriation of the Classical Tradition. But it's really hard to talk about that book without talking about his first book, which is Freedom from Reality, The Diabolical Character of Modern Liberty. And it's in that first book that he critiques Locke. So one way I like, and there's a third one planned. So this is a three-volume project. And in the first one, which is primarily focused on a critique of Locke, he's trying to characterize what modern liberty looks like and how it contrasts with classical and even what he would call a classical Christian view of liberty. And his claim and his argument throughout is that John Locke is a particularly representative thinker in this sense. It is important to note that Schindler is quite gracious in his treatment of these. I think this matters. Like, he recognizes that all of the writers that he critiques are working consciously as Christians, trying to provide a consistently Christian vision of things. His point is, though, that with Locke, for example, there are reasons that it failed and it had repercussions that, you know, are quite contrary to the faith. The second volume is more of a history. It's not an exhaustive history, though it's quite wide or deep in its reach. And it tries to look at how the idea of freedom was appropriated by Christian thinkers from the classical and the Jewish tradition, and then developed up through John Duns Scotus, so the late medieval Franciscan theologian. And his argument about Scotus is very much like his argument about Locke, though they're working, you know, from very different positions. They essentially, Schindler's claim is that they make the same mistake, which is, and I'll try to unpack this more later, that they reverse the classical act potency distinction and they raise potency or possibility over actuality. And this radically changes the nature of freedom and ultimately puts us in sort of opposition to reality. And freedom becomes, as a result, a kind of decoupling from what is real and what is given. So that's D.C. Schindler and his work in sort of a trice. And his claim is that even to the point of Aquinas and Scotus, the Christian appropriation of the classical tradition and the working out of the nature of freedom has not been completed. there is an additional step that needs to be taken. And his promise is that he's going to attempt this in his third volume. So, you know, we'll see what becomes of that.
Here's some of the topics that we will be covering on future episodes of the Postmodern Realities podcast this fall. Coming up in a few weeks is Lisa Cooper on FOMO and FOBO. Well, what is that? Fear of missing out and fear of a better offer. And how do we have a Christian response to those cultural pressures of FOMO and FOBO? We are also going to have another installment of our Back to Basics Apologetics series. Well, how do we know that the Bible is true? Dr. Ben Shaw will be talking to us and about how we can answer that when we are faced with that question, when we do apologetics and explain Christianity to people who are not Christians, friends, co-workers, family members. Also, a very provocative book that's coming out called The Widening of God's Mercy, Sexuality Within the Biblical Story, which will be a critique by Ann Kennedy on this new book by seminary professors who are rethinking what the Bible teaches about sexuality. Also, October is kind of a spooky month. We tend to cover the cults and the occult. We are going to talk about psychics and some of the newest psychics that are out there on social media, and also Skinwalker Ranch, another one that's on the History Channel. And what is happening at Skinwalker Ranch in Utah? They are claiming that it's a portal to hell, among other things, and a lot of spooky activity there. So those are some of the things that you can look forward to on Postmodern Realities podcast. And what's amazing is we have free articles with every single one of those episodes, and no longer do you have to subscribe to the journal. You can get those articles completely free without a paywall on our website, equip.org. And if you go there, you can just click on Christian Research Journal. We also feature them right there on the front page of the website. But we would like to ask you to join with us and partner with us by helping us out, continue to bring you all of this content completely free. So if you go to any landing page at the Postmodern Realities podcast tab, which you'll find if you click on journal, you can find a link there where you can give us a tip. So $3, $5, $10, it helps us bring you all this really great equipping content in your Christian life, in Christian ethics, in cultural apologetics, in classical apologetics, and also in theology. So thank you for your partnership, and also help us out with the algorithm. Really, if you give us a rating or review, specifically a review on Apple Podcasts, we would be so grateful. So back to my conversation about human freedom with Stephen Mitchell.
So you gave us a background on the author D.C. Schindler. And so what is the significance of his work on modern freedom, and in particular, his critique of John Locke?
Sure. Okay, so I'll try to do this briefly. I want to just note that the works themselves are incredibly detailed. And so there are nuances and implications that are just going to be far beyond anything we can cover in this podcast. But what Schindler claims is that in a classical understanding of the world and of freedom, I'm going to use some terms and then I try to explain them. Actuality precedes potentiality. And here's sort of a more pedestrian way, I think, to try to understand that. So in that understanding, a piece of wood is potentially a desk. But in fact, for that piece of wood to become a desk requires a prior actuality in the form of a craftsman who has an idea of what the desk is. So both the idea of the desk and the craftsman himself who can turn that piece of wood into a desk, they are sort of determine, are what make it possible, what give the wood, in a way, its potential to be a desk. Now, in more sort of metaphysical terms, that looks at the fact that our, how do we put this? The good, the way this was put is the good is what determines the will. And so it is, in fact, the priority ontologically of the good as such that sort of enables the will to will the good. And this has been a basic way that classical Western thought understood human will and how it works. And freedom was largely understood to mean, when it was discussed, it was the will's capacity to will the good. The Christian tradition took this up, certainly changed it, adapted it. There's, you know, a whole history of thought and lots of thinkers involved. But what Schindler is claiming is that modern freedom utterly reverses that. And he says of Locke specifically, that Locke wanted to free the will. He wanted to save free will as a concept that was coming under intense scrutiny, because in forms of determinism. So he wanted to free it entirely from determinism, to save it sort of as a real thing, that the will is free. But what he ended up doing was therefore privileging or positing potentiality over actuality. He reversed this. And what that means essentially is that rather than choosing a thing because it is good, for the will to be free, it must be my choice that essentially shows the good thing to be good. Now, that's at an ontological level. Schindler would say at a moral level, he still tried to save the priority of the good. And I think this is a point at which Lockean scholars, or even, you know, lay readers of Locke might have some pushback against Schindler, though. I mean, I think his reading is pretty solid. I do want to note that, you know, that is sort of a point of contention in reading Locke. But what happens then is that, whereas before, you know, the idea was that you choose something because it's good, in Locke, you get this idea that things become good in large measure because they are chosen. And then what actually Schindler will argue further in a long and elaborate set of chapters is that really what happens is the notion of good gets destroyed, and that notion collapses. One way to look at this in a more sort of practical implication is that the ability to say no to something becomes the ground of freedom for Locke. The fact that I can refuse to assent to the good is in fact the only thing that keeps me free. And so no rather than yes, or negation rather than affirmation, becomes sort of the root of liberty. And his argument is that this is in fact utterly contrary to any sort of scriptural or traditionally Christian notion of freedom, which, you know, has to begin with a sort of affirmation of what God is, the givenness of God, as well as what God gives, right? Sort of the nature of existence as such. And so that's what makes, I think, the thing significant. I think further is we just have to recognize, this is very well established, I think, of how influential Locke's vision is on, you know, the modern world, the sort of Western liberal political construct is deeply Lockean. It's not exclusively Lockean or purely Lockean, but it is deeply Lockean. Actually, in both, you could argue, both its, you know, right and left expressions. And so many of us are probably working in Lockean terms, whether we realize it or not. And if his claim is accurate, that it is essentially, unchristian in its implications, though not in its intents, then it's worth our time to sort of think it through, you know, and reconsider whether we're working with notions of freedom that are incompatible with our faith. One way that this, I think, becomes really clear is in his notion of the political community, where freedom gets worked out. And that is that while for Locke, nature is a state of peace. It very quickly, and I don't want to get into all of the, I won't have time to get into all of the reasons that Schindler gives for this. Once again, his work, I think, establishes it pretty strongly that for Locke, the state of nature very quickly becomes a state of war, and that freedom is primarily the drawing of boundaries within which I can live sort of unbothered by my neighbor. And what one thing that Schindler points out is that this notion that my neighbor is primarily a threat to my freedom, and that, you know, our political order is in various ways premised on that, is itself contrary to the ethos, if you would, of the Christian notion of creation. And so, you know, that itself is, in his mind, into the argument he's making, that makes it a problematic vision of freedom. Rather than, he argues that originally freedom was actually a sort of bonding together of people. And his argument is that modern freedom, especially by way of John Locke, actually is a driving of people apart, a keeping of people at a distance. And so rather than being hospitable and communal, it is essentially separatist, I guess, he would say. We wouldn't use just that term. He says diabolical in the root of that meaning, which means to drive apart, as opposed to symbolical, which means to, you know, to draw together. So he goes deep into the etymology of that, and he goes, you know, deep into the texts of Locke's work, and he, of course, engages other Lockean scholars in doing this. But I think that's a pretty good summation. So it's the human will is not determined by the good. So there's that reversal. Potential becomes more important than what's actual. In other words, what could be rather than what is, so that anything given is essentially given as a challenge to my will. I can affirm it, and I might even ought to affirm it, but I affirm it not so much out of its my will's participation in its goodness, but out of some sort of wholly independent self-originating decision to affirm it as good. And so, to put it in another way that Schindler does, whereas in the Genesis account, the divine declares that the whole of the created order is very good, in a Lockean conception, we don't so much participate in that and affirm it on those grounds, we do it of ourselves. So human will is not determined by the good. Human relationships are essentially oppositional, or they become oppositional almost immediately. And then the polis is an attempt just to, you know, keep us from sort of overrunning each other rather than expression of an essential relationship between one another. And then the ability to say no rather than the ability to say yes, the ability to negate rather than to affirm the given world is the root of his vision of freedom. So these are, the best of my ability, my summation of his critique of Locke. And that's what makes it important, I think, especially for you know, your Christian audience who presumably want to think consistently as Christians. When you get a text by a scholar of Schindler's stature, say that here this sort of revered thinker who has shaped much of what we take for granted has made some significant, you know, mistakes that actually put us in sort of opposition to our own faith, it's time to sit up and at least pay attention.
So Schindler's work on the history of freedom includes his comparative study of Thomas Aquinas and John Duns Scotus. Now, I think some of our listeners, they're familiar with Aquinas. We've done some articles on him, but probably less on John Duns Scotus, who lived in the 14th century. He was a Roman Catholic priest and a professor and philosopher. So you might want to explain a little bit more about him and his work, because I think most people listening probably have never heard his name. And when they think of SCOTUS, they think of the acronym for Supreme Court of the United States.
Right. They do. So it is a fact that he's less well known, at least popularly. I'm not myself, in fact, familiar with SCOTUS's work as such. So I'm leaning heavily on Schindler here, you know, in the way I am, say, with Aquinas. So SCOTUS was himself, this is important, actually. I'm glad you put the question this way, because, again, I want to return to the fact that both Aquinas and SCOTUS were, you know, deeply committed reverential Christians. In fact, SCOTUS himself, you know, was beatified by the Catholic Church as Aquinas was. Both of them recognized as doctors of the church. Both of them are recognized as saints. I know also that, you know, not all the listeners to this podcast sort of follow that, but it should be recognized that we're dealing with two profound, you know, and sort of towering Christian minds here. So SCOTUS is known for his work on the univocity of being. And I don't know a lot about this other than essentially, you know, as I understand it, the being of God and the being of creatures are the same kind of being, different in degree. That's not probably really the issue that Schindler is taking up here. He is more known, and this might be a little bit more important, for really raising again will over intellect as being the sort of the primary thing in God. So these theologians are known sort of as voluntarists. And the difference that Schindler is concerned to bring out, though, goes back to really, again, what we were talking about in Locke, is that SCOTUS also, working out of a completely different sort of method and assumptions and everything, also raises or reverses the classical act-potency relationship and raises potency over actuality. And the idea here is to save, he's afraid that the act-potency, which makes potency dependent on actuality, leads to a kind of determinism that destroys freedom. And he wants to sort of save freedom theologically and philosophically so that it can be shown that divine love is the basis of everything. So once again, even if, you know, readers determine that Schindler's critique of him is correct, Schindler himself would want it to be recognized that the intent of Schindler's argument is to show how love, divine love, is at the root of everything. His point again with Schindler is that it just didn't work. It failed. And the reason for the failure is the raising of potentiality or possibility over actuality. One way to put it in lay terms that certainly doesn't do justice to the philosophical terms, but is that what could be becomes, in SCOTUS's thought, more important than what is. And this is where he says he is distinguished from Aquinas, who appropriated, not without changing, certainly changing a lot, but who appropriated the classical tradition in which what is given is in many ways is prior to and in some ways determinant of what could be. So if we go back to that earlier distinction I made, you know, the goodness of a thing is what determines our choice of it. And so what happens here, according to Schindler, is that SCOTUS makes potentiality so important in God, and then later on in the human person, that the created order itself, which in the classical Greek, and as Schindler describes it, you know, throughout most of the Christian tradition, the created order itself is there's a kind of necessity to it. And again, this gets subtle and everything, but in that it's given by God as the thing that God, as the being that he is, would give, I think is the best way I could put it. And Scotus's claim is, the best way I'm going to try to explain it, is that the world that is given as it is could very much have been otherwise. And in fact, therefore, what happens is that what is given, rather than being sort of seen as this absolutely good gift, though Scotus doesn't deny its goodness, just is one possibility amongst others. And so reality as such becomes only one possibility, and potentiality, rather than needing actuality to bring it to fruition, potentiality it actualizes itself, and it makes actuality actual, if I can put it that way. In other words, it is sort of like the world is a select, is one option among many possibilities. And then for us, where that becomes problematic for us, is that any given nature of something is just one possibility as well. And so Schindler, I think, well, he does this in the first book, Freedom from Reality, would argue that our current, our current debate over transgenderism is a result of this raising of potentiality over actuality, to see it in sort of that clear light, that gender is not a given thing, but is something that we determine. And if we determined that our gender is other than it is, freedom requires, our potential to be other than we are is more important than what we are. And if there is a givenness to our nature, it is a limitation on our freedom to be otherwise. Whereas in the classical tradition, as Schindler is describing it, both our gender, our sex, our body, the givenness of those things is in itself a necessary part of our freedom to be those things. So again, John Duns Scotus, one of the great theologians of the church, would have intended nothing like this. But this is what Schindler's argument about that act potency reversal, his claim is that it ultimately works out into that sort of a relationship to the world, even into things like transhumanism, where what matters is not what a human being currently is, right? But, in this kind of transhumanism movement that we're seeing, what we could make of ourselves. So potential over the actual, and this puts us in opposition in Schindler's argument to what is real.
I think some of our listeners might be thinking, well, this seems so esoteric, but at the same time, this is important to understand how we're even thinking about these issues that are facing us that you mentioned, transgenderism, and even I just want our listeners to know we are, dealing with AI coming up and Imago Dei and all those kinds of issues, which are important. I mean, I think, in one sense, we don't really think about it because all of us use AI every day if we have a smartphone and have Siri or Google Voice or something. But in another sense, these are really huge issues need to be considered that have its roots from, again, many centuries ago, but we need to really think through philosophically how that impacts our Christian worldview and what that really means for us holding to certain views.
Right. Yeah. And that's where, where I think writers like, or scholars like Schindler are important, because if he's correct, and part of the root of the problem is a view of freedom that is so much part of the water that we swim in that we, we try to navigate questions about AI or questions about transhumanism or questions about transgenderism. If we try to navigate those in the terms that, sort of these Lockean terms that are available to us, the point is we won't be able to offer a meaningful answer to these. And so there's a kind of deeper work that needs to be done. And it's hard, right? It's difficult work. I mean, you know, for anyone who's not, you know, a trained philosopher, it's difficult. But yeah, I agree with you that it's worth the effort. And so that's, you know, why I'm reading his work and why I wrote the review of his text that I wrote, which is actually trying to look at a little more of a downstream appropriation of that work, you know, looking at how, you know, shifting sort of a kind of power to do whatever I want as our understanding of freedom to love of what is good as our understanding of freedom. Like, how can we practically work that out, like manifest that, practice that, enact that, especially insofar as we are responsible, you know, have responsibility for the formation of young people or human beings of any kind, whether we're talking about parents or educators or pastors, you know, ministers. So thinking about our own formation, right? And then thinking about the formation of those for whom we have some measure of responsibility. Yeah, there is a difficulty to this, just an intellectually challenging topic, but with real, I mean, that's, you know, the whole thrust of Schindler's work is that this understanding of freedom has shaped everything we do and much that we take for granted as Christians. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's real world implications. It's not just, this is what I believe personally. People's beliefs shape our society.
Right, right.
Through legislation,
they do.
Through
they do.
Laws.
And part of what gets interesting about this work is I think Schindler would argue that if we are working with an essentially non-Christian vision of freedom, then we've already seeded the argument. Essentially, we've already done that. And it's in Freedom from Reality, his first text, he actually goes into how this thing affects everything from our notion of property to our notion of money to our understanding of technology to our understanding of freedom of the press to our understanding of religion and argues that, you know, this notion of freedom actually subverts. His claim is that it subverts everything actually that it claims to support. And again, there's no way we can go through each one of those arguments in this podcast, but the text is worth the time getting through to see all of the implications that he's claiming for this.
One of the things that he does talk about is a Christian synthesis of Jewish and Greek conceptions of freedom. So what exactly
yeah.
is that?
Yeah, so I found this really fascinating. And this is more the topic of the second, this is more central to the second book, Retrieving Freedom, than it is to the first book. But one of the claims he makes is that often the Jewish and the Greek conception of freedom are set up as opposed, or the Jewish and Greek conceptions of the world. And one of the things that Schindler is claiming is that, in fact, the Christian tradition has always synthesized both of these, or at its best, it has synthesized both of these, and that both of them bring the Jewish, through their experience of divine, you know, deliverance and election, bring in this divine will as the root of freedom, and the Greeks through their notion of the givenness of the world bring in that the sort of absoluteness of what is as an element of freedom. And one of Schindler's claims in the text is that any full understanding of freedom needs both of these. One of our problems is that we tend to shy off toward one or the other without the balancing effect of both. And so, you know, part of what he's trying to reclaim is a sort of Christian transformation and a finishing of, or a continuation of, what he believes to be the essential Christian transformation or synthesis and transformation of both of these streams of you know, freedom is divine deliverance, freedom is generative perfection. One was interesting that I did not expect when I was picking up Retrieving Freedom. You know, Schindler is a Catholic theologian. He's very much, I think, a Thomist, I think would be a fair way to describe him. But he opens the text with an elaboration of covenant theology, you know, which we most easily associate with, you know, the Reformed Protestant tradition.
Right, with the Reformation, which is...
Yes, but his argument is that the covenant theology, which has its roots in, you know, the covenant that God made, you know, first with the Jewish people, that is actually part of the whole, even the Thomistic vision of Christian freedom. Now he does, this is also really important. His argument as he gets to the end is that while he certainly thinks Aquinas gets the essential notion of freedom as a kind of paradoxical, so that divine being transcends the act potency distinction, but then with everything else puts actuality ahead of potency, but manages to give, you know, actuality to all beings such as ourselves and all this. While he thinks that Aquinas gets it right, he does believe that there is, or he is claiming that there are important elements of freedom, self-determination, that need to be expressed so that Christian freedom doesn't just become a kind of divine determinism that he says are latent in the theology of Aquinas, but have not been drawn out. And so I think what I understand his plan for the next volume is to sort of finish, seems maybe odd to say finish that work, but certainly take the next step in that work, to synthesize the Jewish and the Greek, to draw out what's latent in Aquinas, and to show how giving priority to actuality over potency does not result in a kind of determinism which destroys freedom. That's what he claims he's going to try to do in that third volume.
So finally, I'd like you to, again, summarize his argument. And then are there any controversial parts of it or implications, practical implications of what he's saying?
Okay, yeah. So the argument is that as conceived in the Greek classical tradition and then appropriated, transformed, corrected, you might say, in the Christian tradition, act has priority over potency, or the sort of perfection of a thing is what enables it to become what it is. He then argues that throughout the history of Christianity, or Christian thought and Western thought, there has come to be a reversal of that, wherein potency is what makes actuality possible. And this breaks off any sort of relationship between, intrinsic relationship between potency and actuality. Potency becomes its own thing and, in a sense, arbitrary, dependent upon and reality becomes dependent upon potency. And therefore, reality, when we experience it as creatures who have will of ourselves, who have a certain potency of ourselves, reality becomes a kind of competition, if you will, for our own freedom. And this creates then much of the conflict that we see today, this idea that to be free means not to be messed with. It means to keep my neighbor at arm's length. It means anything which is given or determined is an infringement upon my own freedom. If there is a human nature, it is the implication here. Any given nature is itself ought to be subject to my own potency or my own will if I am to be free. That would be my quick summation of his argument. Whereas love, which is this sort of spontaneous affirmation of what is given, and a sort of bringing to pass what is given from love, which sees the givenness of thing, the nature of something, not as a competitor with my will, but as a gift to be received and also to be enabled, right? My own nature is given me, but I am also enabled to sort of fulfill my own nature by my will. That is a richer, better, older, more consistently Christian view of freedom that nonetheless needs still to be thoroughly worked out. Controversial, I would say there's any number of them. Obviously, any serious critique of Locke is going to arouse probably some resistance. It probably should. I mean, Schindler's work needs to be subject to critique, as does anybody. But Locke, because Locke is so important to the sort of Western liberal nation state and that conception of order and freedom, a challenge to it really does imply a challenge to the way our current world is organized, the current Western world is organized. And that's a world that Christians themselves hold a lot of vested interests in. You know, not only do non-Christians hold vested interests there. So I think it will be controversial there, or at least, you know, there will be some unease with that argument. And then I think part of the claims about SCOTUS, you know, SCOTUS is just, even to this day, you know, the very meaning of a lot of his ideas and terminology continues to be a subject of scholarly debate. I mean, SCOTUS is just, he's called the subtle doctor of the church because he is sort of renowned for being difficult. And so I would imagine that there will be, you know, scholars who might claim that Schindler has misunderstood concepts or terms. And so there'll probably be some argument about that as well. And then I would say that the fact that I think his argument will be, I think it will be essentially Thomistic. I find the Thomistic vision of the world very compelling, but I, you know, that too is not sort of universally shared by Christians. And so there may be some critiques that arise, some, you know, out of the fact that it is so heavily Thomistic. And his claim, I think, that the Christian vision is essentially a synthesis of, at its best, is a synthesis of Jewish and Greek. Again, I find the argument very compelling, but I would imagine that there will be scholars and thinkers and theologians, you know, that will contest that. So those are the places where I think there'll be, you know, anyone who reads him, if they're moved by our podcast or my review to read him, should expect to find some, you know, some critique of his work along those lines.
Well, on a much lighter and less heady note, I have a fun rapid fire question for Stephen. So Stephen is a teacher, and I'd like to know what you like to do for your summer break since now school is back in full swing for the fall.
Yeah, well, I really love cycling, and I get to do way more of that in the summer than I can during the school year, especially once time change happens in the school year, because by the time school's out, you don't have a lot of time before it gets dark. But so I rode a lot of miles on my bicycle this summer. I actually took a week-long bicycle trip with my daughter where we traveled from Richmond, Virginia to Surf City, North Carolina, actually, over about 6 days.
Wow, that sounds like something very fun for the summer. Well, thanks for being a guest again, Stephen.
Thank you, Melanie. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to episode 410 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. Stephen Mitchell, and we've had a conversation about his book review, and his review is called The Just Man Justices, a review of D.C. Schindler's Retrieving Freedom, the Christian Appropriation of the Classical Tradition, and you can read it for free at the Christian Research Institute's website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged.
Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.